You are listening to Zoom, the Retro Comic Book Show.
The landlord's here to visit. There's lots of disco down below. Says I'm doubling the rent, cause the building's condemned. You're gonna help to buy City Hall. Oh, we can. You know we can.
Timmy Doom. Once again, I'm joined by
Trenchcoat Mafia.
Thanks again for joining me, man. So I woke up a little late.
Yeah. Like I was just saying off the air, we gotta record these later in the day when you're actually up.
I mean, well, I'm up now. I'm up. It's 9:40 a.m. my time, and I'm awake, wide awake. Anyway, this is a spotlight on a comic from back in '77, Corporate Crime. You heard of this? Actually, it says Underground Comics Classic, but let me see here.
I never heard of it.
Right. But it's Kitchen Sinks.
I never heard of Kitchen Sink.
That was, I think, the San Francisco... Does Kitchen Sink mean... I think that's the one from...
That's Dennis Kitchen's company he used to run.
Wait, there was a man named Kitchen?
Yes. Yes, that's why it's Kitchen Sink.
No, I think you're fucking with me. I thought it was just because this guy...
Look him up on Wikipedia.
All right, I'll look him up later. If you're saying... I don't know. I think it's just we got everything but the Kitchen Sink. Forget it. Kitchen Sink Comp Enterprises, let's see here, and I think Robert Crumb, is this one that Robert Crumb used to do Fritz the Cat for?
I don't know.
Okay, let's see here. On the cover, you got Corporate Kind Comics, it's issue one, and a woman is distressed on the cover. She's on Tuck.
Because she wants somebody to come rape her, and nobody is.
No, this is... It turns out it's Karen Silkwood, who is a whistleblower for a company she worked for.
Snitch.
And somebody is on the phone. She's on the phone crying. It's saying, Karen, what's wrong? I said, Steve, I'm scared. Come and get the documents. I think somebody's trying to kill me.
And this guy, it was a silhouette in the window... is looking like Alfred Hitchcock.
Yeah, this is big. And then at the bottom it says, true stories of corporate crime. Yeah, this is a true story of a woman and the shit she went through, the horror she went through, but yet, I think it's kind of sensationalistic.
Who played her in the movie, Sally Field?
No. No, what's her name? Meryl Streep.
Oh.
And that thing, Cher, and Cher was also in the movie as her friend, and I remember Cher saying that she was in the movie theater watching the trailer to it, and then they saw, it was Silkwood, and that's a serious movie about this woman who's getting her life threatened by a company, and showing Meryl Streep going through all this stuff. Then as Cher said, as soon as she came on the screen, the audience started laughing.
Yeah!
that's not funny.
Because she's so ugly, of course.
Well, I think it's because she's from Sonny and Cher, and she was, at that time, wasn't taken seriously as an actress. She wanted to be taken seriously.
She shouldn't be taken seriously.
She ended up winning Oscars. Is that the... Yeah, Oscars.
I don't know why.
For her.
Did you ever see Moonstruck? That was horrible.
So you sat down and watched Moonstruck?
Yeah. My wife wanted to see it. It wasn't my idea.
Also, Gent Coat Mafia actually going to see to appease a woman. That's so nice of you, so romantic.
What guy won't see anything for sex?
Well, was Nicolas Cage good, is it, at least?
No, not really.
Come on, say something good about it. All these people were nominated for Academy Awards.
I don't know why. They never gave Oscars to anybody or anything good, except Heath Ledger.
Well, who do you think deserves it besides Heath Ledger that should have been nominated and wasn't?
Oh, Tim Burton?
What? For what? For visual effects, that's good. I think he probably won for visual effects, but his direction number one. Because
Beetlejuice.
His movies aren't good. I ain't seen a Tim Burton, even though I admit I didn't watch
Edward Scissorhands?
It's a good looking movie, yeah. But Edward Scissorhands and Beetlejuice I didn't see, but they didn't even interest me enough to want to see them.
Sweeney Todd?
A musical with a bunch of people can't sing. All right.
Yeah, I was just surprised it was good too.
I didn't see that, I admit. I did see Planet.
Anyway, Helena Bonham Carter was still hot when she made that. She got really old and ugly fast.
That's not. She's still got a little cute face to her. You can tell she's still the girl who was in Fight Club, right?
That was a long time ago, too.
Oh, man. I don't want to hear about people getting old and broke up. Shoot, I'll be old enough soon enough. Well, actually, I am now. Anyway, this
stuff. Are you 40 yet?
Yes.
Oh, there you go.
Fuck you. I'm about to go jump off a bridge. Anyway, and you know who else is 40? Well, he's probably 42, actually. Kevin Smith, I'm mad, man. Because I remember him starting off on his first, and now he, you know, his first movie was Clerks.
Has he made anything good after, like, Dogma?
No.
I didn't think so.
Anyway, what about Jersey Girl with Ben Affleck and...
Ugh.
Oh, there was Cop Out with... I saw that. That was with Bruce Willis and Tracy Morgan.
He sold out Kevin Smith.
Yeah, that movie was horrible.
I can't believe he made Clerks 2.
Now, why is that so loud? That's a movie that's from his origins.
Because Clerks 1 was fine. It didn't need a sequel.
Oh, then he made Red State, which is about... I forgot the guy's name who always stand outside of gay funerals. And
God Hates Fags, that guy?
Yeah. Oh, shit, let me turn this off. Yeah, all those motherfuckers, he was making a movie about them, basically a parody, not even a parody, just is his comment on religion. But a lot of people didn't like it. I liked it. It was about these people thought that the rapture was coming, so they were just killing sinners.
Oh, speaking of, did you ever see the rapture with Mimi Rogers?
No. I heard she was fucking in it. She was naked.
Yep. And it was a good movie, too.
But JD was mad because it wasn't really about the rapture. Or it didn't show the rapture. Like, he thought it was going to be a religious movie showing people disappearing.
It wasn't like a big budget movie to have that many special effects in the first place.
But I take it you liked it.
Yeah, because in the end, she has to stay in purgatory forever. The end. That was cool.
That is sad.
Well, she wouldn't say she loved God. So God's apparently really petty.
The people give her that opportunity in the movie?
Yeah. The coolest part was when she shot her daughter dead. That was cool.
Okay, I gotta see. That's infanticide. Whatever you call it.
No, she was a whiny little girl. But she deserved it.
She killed a girl. Was a girl under 16?
Yeah.
Oh my, no.
You don't see violence against children in movies, so that was great.
Okay, maybe I gotta check this movie out. But I'm surprised that you would be. I mean, wait, did religious people go to heaven?
Oh yeah, all the religious idiots did. So. There was like a horror movie that way.
Wait a minute. Why would you? I'm surprised that you were for this movie. But I guess you took it as a work of fiction. And that it could,
I like any movie that's like tragic.
That no. You and Courtney and all y'all downbeat people. No, I want happiness. I want happy endings. Okay.
Courtney like the Toy Story movies.
Okay.
And they're not depressing. But it would be cool if they were.
Can't believe. No. Okay, why? There's enough sadness in life already. Why would you want that more in your movies?
Well, this is a sad comic.
Yeah, let's get back to this. We just highlight the stories, the big ones, because I didn't read some of the dumber ones or the more boring ones. But basically, it start out with a message from the editor. Why he gotta have? He actually has a comic book. Actually, I guess this is a better idea than text for the message from the editor. Usually they have a long ass paragraphs, and boy, I don't give a fuck. But actually, all he's doing is walking to the bus station, walking from the beach to the bus station, and going to work or something. And he's thinking to us what this comic is about.
Corporate, yeah. And then Harvey Pekor shows up, of course. Because this is all talking heads here.
He said, I could be robbed or poisoned by corporate criminals and never know about it until I read the papers. Or maybe never know. Corporate crime, antisocial behaviors. And basically he just made this comic to educate us dummies about the people stealing from us, the thieves, burglars, and robbers. Who steal $3 billion a year. Oh, $3 billion. That ain't shit nowadays. Okay, this is a collection of corporate atrocities, he says, and many details are invented, such as what people look exactly like. Okay, yeah, that's fine. We give you that, Now we start out with the first story. Seemed to be Karen Silkwood. November 13th, we show her on a highway. She's driving to a meeting, or so she can out this company. She says, 20 more minutes and the outlaws wish they never heard of me. I don't know what she's driving to.
20 more minutes and she'll be dead.
Her car screeches off the road. violently out of control and careens 1,000 yards into the edge of a highway and bam, crashes into a concrete culvert, killing Karen Silkwood. And the cop is thinking, poor kid, wonder what happened. Wonder what all these papers are.
And that's the end of the story.
No, it goes back to 1972. I was just born. I was a baby. Yeah, I wish I could go back to that time. Right, it was a good time.
And you were podcasting even then.
Yes. She's a 26-year-old. She leaves 7 years of marriage and 3 children to return to her greater interest of science and technology. No,
she left her kids with their father, so apparently she didn't give a shit about them.
They acting like, and plus she must have started at 18, and she'd been married. I'm like, goddamn. Yeah, and they're trying to make it like she's some young college student who's going off to pursue science and technology and be this intellectual. No, she's working at a fucking factory company. Okay. She said, I want to help develop clean source energy like atomic power. But you ain't developing shit. You're working at a plutonium factory. And she's working at a lab technician with fuel rods with plutonium. This is a sad story.
Not really.
Wait a minute. This company here, well, first of all, they're dealing with plutonium. They say it's the most dangerous substance known to man. 1 pound evenly spread over the earth could kill us all.
How could you evenly spread it all over the earth in the first place?
I don't know about that. 1 pound with 16 ounces, you just spread it, you know, a couple ounces here, a couple. She got plutonium in her house in this comic book, but how come it didn't kill us all? And I just saw a movie. I forgot what movie I saw where they had, Expendables 2, where they had tons, like 7 tons of plutonium that Jean-Claude Van Damme was.
After Expendables 1, why'd you see the sequel?
Because I snuck into it after seeing 3 movies. I paid for one movie, and that was the last movie I saw was Expendable. I snuck into the theater just to, so I could review it. But it wasn't.
That had to be as bad as like a Tyler Perry movie.
Yeah, but at least it had, this one had a Terminator, Bruce Willis, John McClane, and Jean-Claude Van Damme. But Tyler Perry has.
They need to just make Terminator 4.
They did already.
Oh, I didn't even see 3.
Yeah, I would skip both of those. All right. And basically, some people get in the union. They strike because there's no safety at the company. They're not concerned about the worker's safety.
Apparently, one of the scabs is the safety officer.
And they're not experienced. And then, take the time to tell us she got up with a 22-year-old Drew Stevens. Oh, why do we care?
Because she's a whore?
At summer of 73, they were happy together. I'm like, just, okay, who gives a fuck? What about her kids? What about your kids, Karen?
There's not one panel of this story about them.
After several months, Karen finds her own apartment, blah, blah, blah. But now, I guess back at the company, she demands that they're not doing anything right here at this company. Everything's unsafe. And the guy says, troublemaker. You're thinking to her, she's a troublemaker. She doesn't have a respirator.
Say she needs a special narrow size. I don't know why.
She's working on some plutonium factory with no respirator. Everybody else has them when they have a airborne contamination, and she's got a look of horror on her face, and it shows her going through the shower. I remember this in the movie. They had this part.
Notice everybody else has a respirator.
Even though, they still, that is true. She could be breathing it in. But back in the 70s, I bet you none of that shit was really...
Did they show Meryl Streep in the shower naked in the movie when they did, got to this point?
Yeah, but I just saw the... I didn't see the whole movie, but I saw the trailers and stuff. She was in the shower. But yeah, but it just showed her like this from neck up. And do you agree, young Meryl Streep was kind of hot?
No. Okay. What do you know? You like the author.
She's a beautiful woman. What a woman. And then, so she's running for stuff. It's like a union. Is Oakwood. Okay, that's what this is. It's a union. She's trying to negotiate the contracts. People making all kinds of complaints against the company. I like this art, whoever's doing this art. Yeah. Just kind of realistic. Not realistic, but I should say. I just like
it. You would think they would give the guy a credit.
That's true. They did just like Jack T. Chick. These motherfuckers not getting credit. And there's only one artist in here who gets credit. That's because she gives herself credit. She puts herself in the story.
Yeah, Trina Robbins later.
Oh, that's okay. That's the one you told me about. I guess we'll talk about her later. A long time ago, you told me about her. Let's see. Okay, so basically, let me skip through all this shit. Where once again, let's see here. Oh, a scientist says that there's no cases of cancer, but over the next 10 to 15 years, y'all got a high risk of getting it. I wonder if Karen Silkwood is dead. I wonder if any of those other guys got cancer.
Probably all of them.
It says she needs sleeping pills because she's all, you know, she's a nervous wreck. And it shows on November 5th she comes to work. She's got plutonium on her skin, and she was contaminated at work. But then she goes and gets checked out, and they said, we got to go to your apartment, check all that out. Her apartment is covered with it. It's got plutonium on the cheese, the bologna. She shouldn't be eating that. I think bologna is just setting off the thing by itself.
Bologna is pretty gross.
I can't believe I used to eat that as a kid. My mother used to feed us that. That was the 70s for you. I think bologna was big in the 70s. Well, I think more people ate bologna in the 70s. I can't believe I ate that mess. So I guess they're saying, did somebody, like, sabotage her apartment?
Apparently there's plutonium everywhere.
And then she's upset, but she's cleared, her and her friends are cleared. They did a full body, he said, we did a full body count, another test, and I'm sure they did do a full body count on her. And they don't need to worry about plutonium poisoning at this moment. So now she's like, fuck it, she's gonna bust these people. And it breaks down the night, hour by hour, what she's doing. She's gonna talk to this reporter from the Times. She's gonna have a big press conference. But on the way to the press conference, her ass got in a car accident and was killed. Let's see here. He said the evidence Karen Silk would die for has never been found, so all the papers that she had got from the company was gone in a big car accident.
And who poisoned her apartment? And they show the guy from the company saying, the broad did it to herself to embarrass the company.
Yeah, I think I heard that company, I think they were shut down, I think.
Well, good.
But here they don't say it in the comic book. Maybe nothing happened at that point because it's only 1977. But I think it's pretty good. You know, those comics, the big book of, you know, that they had in the 90s, the big books of bad people, of weird people.
The Big Book of Death was a fucking great big book.
I think that was the first one. I think that's why it was great, because it was the first one.
Yeah.
And then came the sequels. I like them too. I like a lot of those. But I think this reminds me of that style of book. It's different. different artists. But the next one is, well, this one, next one, I'll skip, is kind of boring. Even though it's about the ITT scandal, which is basically a telephone company bribing people in the government to not break them up, so, you know, so they can be this big monopoly that they are. But the art, it looks like somebody who drew Dick Tracy.
Yes, yes, it does.
Peter Poplaski, I haven't. I don't know, maybe he did draw one of those. The eyes on these people look weird, but yeah, this does look like the Dick Tracy comic book. He probably did draw Dick Tracy at some point.
And in the end, the guys who broke into Watergate or arrested the end.
But at one point, though, I like in the story, G. Gordon Liddy.
He's like, "Who do you want my money to kill?"
Yeah, so at one point, yeah, they tell him, well, they just tell him, they're his boss at the committee to reelect the president. He said, "Anderson's always trying to embarrass us. Boy, it'd be nice if somebody can get rid of that guy." And then G. Gordon Liddy goes right out to shoot him. Hey, did you tell him to kill Jack Anderson? He's like, "What?" And they catch him in time, which, hey, if that happened, then you know at some point in time, some president's administrations had motherfuckers killed.
Oh, yeah. I can't believe they never had Castro killed.
They tried to, or they, well, actually, no, they tried to embarrass him more. I'm surprised they did that, because I heard they like sent the cars over there that were supposed to explode in his face, you know, just to embarrass him, but the cigars didn't work. And they put something in one of his cigars or drinks that would cause his beard to fall off on national. But they said that didn't work. I'm like, what the fuck?
That would have been funny, at least.
But I'm like, well, I want to know what else these motherfuckers did that really, that we don't know about. And I know they, you know, they tapped the phones of Martin Luther King, who wasn't hurting anybody.
So, I'm sure Bush Jr. had plenty of people killed.
Yeah, the soldiers that he sent over to Iraq, for one.
Well, they're just the ones we know about.
And I won't get too political. Well, fuck all these people who acting like he was a great president and Obama is tearing down the country. I'm like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. Notice Bush never got elected fairly.
Yeah, because the second one, what happened? Was it Ohio? Like they said, there might have been some fishiness in Ohio.
Both times there was fishiness. I can't believe, who was it? Gore or Kerry was just like, oh well, you know he got paid off.
I don't know. No, he just accepted his loss. He didn't want to seem like a whiny little baby. But first of all, well, Gore tried to fight it. Or people were saying, no, he's the president, just accept it. I'm like, wait a minute, why ain't y'all mad that about what's going on here? Why aren't more of us angry?
Because everybody got paid off.
No, because they fought. He fought it in the court, in the Florida Supreme Courts, but they ruled.
Florida should just secede anyway.
Yeah.
All the idiots there.
This is break off.
So should all the southern states. They tried to secede already in the 1860s. Just let them now.
No, that would...
bunch of inbred hicks.
That would weaken both parts of the country. Like, both, well, you know, with the new two countries.
We would get rid of so many Republican voters, though.
Yeah, then there would be civil war. More civil... I mean, not civil wars. There would be more wars between our two countries. North and South. Yeah, you can't do that. Can't do that. And then the financial power will be weakened, and it'll be a mess. It'll be a mess. But, let's see here. Oh, the next one was, this is the one, which I think this is just a whiny brat. The one you were talking about, your Trina Robbins girl.
Yeah.
The Great American.
She's a bitch anyway. Because she put down Robert Crumb.
Why? Because sexism?
Allegedly. Robert Crumb is not a sexist. Bitches really are inferior.
But he draw women. He has a unique art style of drawing women. And women do look like that. Some women do. Now, it's an exaggeration, of course. But, oh, yeah.
Well, no, there really are some bitches with giant asses the way he draws them.
Yeah, exactly. That's what. And I think some people appreciate that in comics. But even though that one, was it the She-Devil? I guess she's the sexist.
I get so sick of seeing giant titties, it's good to see giant asses sometimes as well.
But She-Devil, do you think she's the... I don't know if you know I'm talking about this, like, Hispanic-looking woman with a big butt that he has. And she's bent over.
What's wrong with that?
Gina Robbins talked about the Great American Airplane Scam of 73. This ain't no Great American... Bitch! She found first of all, she got a newspaper, Watergate, because I know the liberals, they were loving that at the time. In 1973, she goes back to 1970 to talk about, and she found a deal at this airline for $12. Oh, she can go from San Francisco to LA for $12 or across the country for $69. So, wow, what a deal. What a bargain. And she says, there's a hippie named Ken Moss, who made $1 million on Wall Street, and he wanted to do something for the people, so he got airline. He started an airline called Freelandia, counterculture air club with cheaper prices. And she said, all you gotta do is sign up for $75, and she joined because she's broke ass hippie.
And she said, and the stewardess is apparently dressed like, quote, fugitives from Star Trek.
Yeah, and she, first of all, she just complained because the airport was way, it's a small little airport that was, like, way off from the major airports in the city, and she was complaining about that, but then when she got on the airplane, like she said, she enjoyed herself. First of all, I would have liked to see those outfits that those airlines had to wear, and she said, the food, the organic food was the best I ever had. And she had a great time. Well, this is for hippies. And there was a bunch of hippies on the plane. She said, 2 weeks later, on a return flight, things are already deteriorating.
Do you still hate hippies?
Yes.
Just curious.
And then she was upset because there was only fruit and cheese to eat on the plane. Bitch, that's how it is half the time on a regular air flight. And then she had to pay full fare to get back to San Francisco. This on the way back, she said, but they promised us $12. That's what we paid for. He said, man, don't be uptight, get with it.
And this guy's obviously gay, he's got his hands on his hips, and he's pointing and he's looking at him. Yeah.
And then she complains about her trip to Europe. That, okay, just find out that the flights to Europe went up from $100 to $169. And he said, oh, well, it's still a bargain. And then she says, she got to bring, there was no food on the flights. But at least they let you know ahead of time. You can bring your own shit. Yeah. And then she said, this is the last straw. And then she canceled her flight and went with another group. And it's like, and then she makes it like, it was some big scandal because Ken Moss, was indicted in the death of Robbie McIntosh, the drummer for the Average White Band. Yeah.
Well, they sucked anyway, so he deserved to die.
You ain't like pick up the pieces?
No.
And then, for some reason, she has a need, feels the need to go into the story about how Cher, how McIntosh died after snorting heroin at this guy's party in Hollywood Hills, and Cher had brought the bass player back to her home. I'm like, what's that got to do with Ken Moss? And so what, they had drugs at a Hollywood party, like every other Hollywood party, especially in the 70s.
Gina, is this Chastity Bono here in the corner?
That's what I was. she's so girly with her little girly dress and pigtails.
She had a sex change, didn't she?
Yeah, even as a kid, she didn't look like this. She had a, she had a shag. She looked like a dyke as a kid. She had a shag. She looked like a little, when she was 6 years old, I ever saw a picture with her and her parents, or she was on her parents' TV show. She looked like a little, what's her name? the actress who was in the original Freaky Friday. I think she's from Jodie Foster. That's who she's like. No,
speaking of dykes.
No, Christy McNichol. That's who she looked like. Remember Christy McNichol, that little shag? I'm like, that was, she did not look like this. What the hell is going on? Okay, and that's Trina Roberts.
Artistic license.
And then she talks about how
Trina Roberts wishes she ever looked this good, like she draws herself.
I was about to say that.
Because in the movie Crumb, she looks really beat.
I remember, so she was...
I can't believe Steve Lalua ever fucked her.
He's an inker, right?
He was, I think he penciled Spider-Woman and Coyote for Epic. Oh,
okay. Yeah, she got herself looking all, like, thin and cute, with cute lips and wispy blonde hair.
Wish fulfillment.
I was, somebody said, oh, you got your date with Trina Robinson, Steve, and he looked at this picture. Oh, damn. See, I wonder, I can imagine this character, so she must be really cute. And then he's seen her in real life.
And he's like, yo, I guess I gotta fuck her anyway.
And she's mad because this guy got a slap on the wrist. Ken Moss. It's like, shut up. He tried to start a company. It didn't work out.
This chick here with the cigarette in the panel before it, she's hot. Good for Ken Moss for getting her.
And let's see here. Then there, I skipped this other one, but the Golden Years, this is about old people getting ripped off by scam artists. Guys who are, you know, who they get their, you know, they get their pension or whatever, and they live in their own apartment. But these
good one guys here, water, please, water.
And it's like, and the nurse is like,
or somebody said, "Let me bag another Thorazine."
This one here gets a second blanket. Her nephew's coming to do a donation. That's how they do. They start to clean up the place when people come on through, when the relatives come through. And then they got these caricatures. They got these guys that look like 1940s thugs and gangsters going to these old people's homes. Here's an example. They take an old man who's in his own home. He got $70,000 worth of savings through his life. And they take him out of it. They bully him out of his home saying that, oh, you got to come in. We're going to turn you in for falsifying your relief claim. You know, guys, but I don't understand. You can do time for fraud, buddy. I hate people like this. Ah, that sucks. And they say that older people are more gullible. I don't see how you become more gullible in your older age. But anyway, they take advantage, unless some of them just have memory problems, and they take advantage of old people and take their money here.
Well, he should be dead at this point anyway. He's got to be in his 70s.
So you saying these people should have this man's money since he's too old to use
it? I got to figure out a way for me to steal old people's money. It should be pretty easy.
That's horrible. Horrible. And then a black woman here, she knows that these people she worked for are ripping off these older folks. She wrote a plea to the governor about it, and the governor obviously didn't do nothing, but a few days later...
She only got this job because she was on welfare, it says.
Yeah, that is true. She was sent to work by the welfare department. But at least she's an honest woman. She's trying to help these people and sends it better. And they send the cops in to get her.
Yeah, that's what she gets.
To the mental hospital. Wait a minute, you're down for this corruption.
So the governor's apparently getting kickbacks.
Yeah, people are in it. People in the system are in on it. And so, I like this. They said she's committed without legal counsel and held for 90 days. She said, this guy is asking me, doctor, doctor, you got to help me. And the doctor says, oh, clearly this is a case of racial suspicion and jealousy. It's the actual quote from the psychiatrist's report. And they spelled psychiatrist wrong. Anyway.
Yes, they did. There's no Y between S and C. And this comic needs a proofreader.
They probably did not have a staff at Kitchen Sink, even though it was the 70s, and they've been around for like 10 years. But, then by the time she's let out, though, nobody's taking her claim seriously, because she was she was in a home for insanity. She was in a crazy house. Like, damn.
Yeah, a lawyer here is like, nobody's gonna believe you, bitch. You were declared crazy, so your testimony would be thrown out of court.
It says, by this time it was too late to help the old man anyway. He had died, worn out by poverty.
How does poverty wear you out?
Well, shit, you gotta do more shit when you're poor. When you got your own home and you got a little bit of money, you can afford a nurse, somebody come in once in a while, you know, and to check upon you and you're good. But here he's worn out by poverty and despair. He's despairaged. And then I show these guys who rip them off and show them as like these 1940s gangsters, and they even have a little mall, a little who help them rip the old people off. It's 1977. Ain't nobody dressing like this with fedoras and just like Al Capone.
But it's funny.
But as for you, people like you, Dan, what's wrong with this phone? Let me turn this motherfucker off. Says, as for people like you who want to rip off the older folks, you got that famous picture of the farmer and his wife. Remember, you're not getting any younger yourself. And basically, we need to help our older citizens, is what it's saying.
You're fading out.
Oh, testing, 1, 2, 3.
Better, I guess.
He says, let me check my sound here. But it says, basically, the moral of the story is, as the famous...
Now I can hear you.
Famous picture of the farmer, the farmer and his wife, is a famous picture of them. He says,
fuck that farmer.
He says, we're not getting any younger ourselves, so we can't afford to stand by and let this happen to senior citizens. Are you taking anything from any of these lessons?
Not really.
Then there's Mr. San Diego, a long cartoon basically telling us, rich people get off. People who've got connections get off. Meanwhile, normal people, even though who go to, who get charged for crimes like drug possession, prostitution.
I can't believe this prostitute, because she looks too old to be a hooker.
I think this is just the art style. This motherfucker draws pictures of people like, I can't believe you get a job as an artist drawing people like this.
Isn't this Kim Deitch?
I don't know, no name. He didn't even write his name at the bottom of the, or maybe he did in the last. Yeah, Kim Deitch. Yeah. Oh, you recognize this style?
Yeah.
Okay. So basically, at the end of the day, Nixon gets his friend Smith off. Wait, what did Smith do? Because I read it, but I forgot. Anyway, Smith was the head of the Westgate, California, $200 million conglomerate, which includes hotels, companies, tuna fleet. Anyway, he was greasing the palms. He systematically looted Westgate out of $100 million. He's embezzled. But he knew Nixon. And Nixon's a friend of his. And he did some things for Nixon and his administration. And he greased the palms. And next thing you know, he got a slap on the wrist. He got a 2-year suspended sentence. Even though he built the company out of $100 million. And he's walking. And at the end, last panel, the black man, I'm surprised the only black person in court, the rest of the people are white, prostitute and everybody else. The black guy says, hey, wait a minute, ain't he going with us? And then somebody says, shut up, jerk.
He's got money.
Is it so it goes? Okay.
Yeah, that's the end.
There's a couple of stories here. One of them I found interesting about Paul Racist TV, where there was a TV station from the 50s to the like 60s that offended half 47% of their viewers were minorities, but they offended the viewers with blatant racism in the programming. So when they in 1955, when there was an interview with Thurgood Marshall, who's in the NAACP council, WLBT cut off the sign with "Sorry, cable trouble." Even though they could have had cable trouble, for real.
I don't think they did.
And it says, periodically they suggested that the communists were behind civil rights struggles. Yeah, Fox TV getting its start. And announcers talked of niggers. Wait a minute. Did somebody really? Come on. Nah, they need more.
Believe that?
I need more evidence than that, though, just to say that the announcers talked of niggers. They're in this need.
Probably who was going to stop him?
No, announcers. No. I need more evidence, like specific. Like, this is what happened. Details of what happened. I don't believe. But it says the United Church of Christ, no black people, complained to the FCC that they said their license revoked, and the church waged a long struggle, and they finally revoked their license. It doesn't say when. How long
probably
it took.
Probably like last month.
I know. 1977 when this comic was made, or 1979. And it said, but they appointed William Dilday, who was the first black TV manager of the station. Yeah, I'm sure he had a easy time adjusting.
Yeah.
They probably gave him hell. Okay, I need to look him up and see. It just says, this case set up a valuable precedent that any responsible group could challenge the station's right. I wish it was a cartoon, but they said it was just one panel of illustration with the rest of text. Okay. Oh, let me see. Some of the things that some of the announcers supposedly were saying in this cartoon, just shocking to decent white folks, agitators. And it says, we got difficulties when Thurgood Marshall was on the air. And it says, the South clean niggers. I'm like, no, I need more specific evidence, but fuck it. I'll skip this Teapot Dome scandal and go straight to the next story, Anti-Monopoly by Leonard Riefus. Oh, we got a nice credit at the beginning of the story. 1977. I never heard of Leonard. I've probably seen his art before. But basically, it shows how we talk about Monopoly.
Did he draw and write the cartoon history of the universe?
He might have. This does look like that art style. I'm not sure if he's the guy.
I'm not sure either.
If he did, his style improved a little since then. Because some of this faces on these people, woo! But the this one guy, he their kids, they're playing Monopoly. This dude is mad about Monopoly. The real Monopoly's taking over, probably like ITT, and the son said, "What's wrong with monopolies, Dad?" He said, "A monopoly is when a company controls the supply of something, they can charge unfair high prices." And they said, "Oh, you knew like when it costs more on land on the railroad when somebody owns them, or meaning his kids is."
How come you can't put houses or hotels on railroads?
Because if the train goes off the rail, it slams into the houses like. What really happened in real life. It fucked up a whole neighborhood. That's why. But anyway, the father is mad about this game. He said, this Monopoly game teaches you how to be a monopolist, grab it all and raise the prices. I'm going to buy you a new game. No, motherfucker, you need to keep your kid playing this game so they can learn how to live in the real world. But he says, all these games are pro-Monopoly. Because there's a game called Big Oil, Easy Money, Finance, probably Life.
Easy Money sounds fun.
Yeah, I like this Easy Money now. And then he started a game. He makes a game called Anti-Monopoly. And he, and let's see here. It says, Ralph invented Anti-Monopoly Bust the Trust game. He marketed it himself. Okay, and he decided to tell us the real story of Monopoly, which is basically, that a woman named Lindsay Maggie patented the landlord's game. And students, I guess this was a
teacher. And she is not attractive.
She's 1904. She's wearing gear that covers the whole body. Well, actually, her face is busted too, but I blame it on Leonard Rufus. Okay, then, 1931, Charles and Olive Todd and Ruth taught their friends how to, Charlie and Esther Darrow, how to play Monopoly, the landlord's game, which was basically a teaching game, you know, like a public domain thing that everybody learned, you know, that people played for fun. But Charlie, he went straight to Parker Brothers and told them it's his own, it was his idea.
Meanwhile, he's got his fingers crossed between his behind his back.
And Parker Brothers, Monopoly, they called it Monopoly. They changed the name from Landlord's Game to Monopoly, and it was an overnight sensation. And then one of the Parker Brothers said, hey, wait a minute, somebody sent us a letter saying that this Charles Darrow didn't invent Monopoly. And one of the other Parker Brothers, who looks like the money bags, the guy from Monopoly, he says, no one ever really invents anything. All games come from old games.
Really? I don't think so.
Well, it had to start from some. Yeah, they all probably started from somewhere. They were all probably rip-offs. But the Parker Brothers protected their patent, and they bought the rights to the landlord's game and finance. And basically, they destroyed all the old boards. I'm like, damn. You collected all the early Monopoly boards, and they remade it, and they got millions of dollars. Of course, we know this game today, 100 years later. Okay, Darrow became a rich bastard, spent the rest of his life growing orchids and shooting home movies. I'm like, what's the point of them telling us that? They're trying to say he didn't do nothing with his money, but enjoy it.
Yep. Guess not. And the judge ordered the Anti-Monopoly game name change to just Anti. And that's about it.
Yeah, that's it.
So the bad guys win again.
I'm trying to think. There's one of the stories the good guys win. No, wait a minute. The ITT story when it ended in Watergate. Which the most famous case of winning.
Well, the American people lost that because we wound up with President Ford.
That's true. He seemed kind of ineffective as a president. And then there's a story about basically the Lolo Massacre, where these miners wanted to start a union, and they got shot up. This is like in the early 20th century, or maybe late 19th century, and basically ended with a bunch of people dying, workers being shot up by the company. The company hired mercenaries, their own police force, and they ended up killing all these men and women who lived in tents outside the mines. They were workers. They wanted fair wages.
I like this scene here. With the little kid, father, may I have my allowance? Oh, yes, Nelson, here's your quarter.
That's the rich guy's kid. And, I forgot why I was so mad about that when I first read the story. But, anyway, he's the rich guy.
Because the company is evil.
And they're not giving their workers any money. But they hired this private police force. They shoot up the camp of workers because they're protesting.
They show up on horses for no reason.
Because that was the, you know, actually it's 1914. That's how people got around mostly is horses. Hort cars had yet to be invented. And this mother has her kids hide in a hole in her tent, a hole dug in her tent. They burn down all the tents. Women and children are dying. And just Leonard Reefus again. Dang, he worked overtime on this comic. And end up two women and 11 children died in this massacre. So ultimately, the union spent $4 million on a strike, but it wasn't enough. The strikers were defeated. Damn, another story where the bad guys win.
Yup, because that's how it is.
And I admit, I didn't read this next story many might have, but did the bad guys win here too?
It's
a story about, it is too much. this is about corruption in China. Japan. It's all the same to me.
Yeah, the bad guys win. And the of course. The end.
I gotta read the story because it looks good. And that's basically the end of this comic. This is depressing. Why can't they tell the stories about where the union wins, the little guy?
Because that never happens, practically.
Why?
And here we have a color back cover, Demon Seed, about the Dalkon Shield.
Have you ever heard of that?
I did, actually. A lot of pregnant bitches died because of it. That's what they get for getting knocked up in the first place.
Oh, man. caused 17 deaths and hundreds of hysterectomies. Okay, that's women having to get these surgery, get everything cut out of them. They're not able to have children after that. Oh my god. And it says, inconceivably, at this point in 1977, though it may seem over a million women still host this demon seed of modern medicine for the Dalkon Shield. Stupid bitches. You know what, all the women died, but yet y'all still using this thing. Well, back in 1977.
Yeah, I have nothing to add. I think you said it all with stupid bitches.
Oh, you know what? I apologize for that. That's sexist. And I shouldn't be... Anyway, since this is an independent spirit type of comic, got a bunch of indie artists and indie mindset. What you think, brother? I just got a 1 to 10.
5.
I give it a... Why such a low score?
Mostly crap art.
Did you like Cephas?
Yeah.
Wait, did you like any of these artists?
Trina Robbins.
So you admit, she's a talent, but you... what other kind did she draw? Did she just do stuff with her in it? I've seen her. I remember seeing that.
She's drawn like undergrounds.
She probably couldn't get work at one of the big two even back then.
I don't know why. Her art's better than Don Perlin's or Don Hex or anybody else named Don.
But if she was drawing like Wonder Woman or something, she wouldn't draw in a comic book style. She has a different.
I think she did draw Legend of Wonder Woman, the miniseries from the 80s.
Okay, well, you know what? I might have to check that out then. Oh, did you hear about Grant Morrison? He's doing the Earth One Wonder Woman, and he said he's gonna bring it back to like what's his name, Marsden. His issues. He said once you he saw he claimed.
We'll see. Nobody else has managed to be as good.
He claims that he saw this that somebody at DC showed him this old Marsden book that they have in the vaults that they would never release because it was wacky out there about sex and his idea. You know, it has some of his ideas about sex and relationships in the story, and they just thought it was too out there. And he said he read all the Marsden stuff. He said, once you take the sex out of Wonder Woman, it doesn't work.
there's nothing left.
And, but one person protested that on their comments. I think it was a woman. She was just saying, I don't think men should be writing stories about women's sexuality. This sounds like a bad idea. And everybody jumped on
it. Has she ever heard of Alan Moore?
Exactly. I'm like, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard of. That right there is sexist saying that. Yeah, some men might not have an idea. A lot of them might not. But there's some, you know, you can't say that an artist can't do this.
Steve Gerber understands that all broads are just dizzy bitches.
The sexism. Oh, where do I get this coming? I said 7 because of the cover. even though the cover is sensationalistic, the sensationalistic aspects of this comic interest me. To me, this is a precursor to the big comics, which I think that's Kitchen Sink too. I think, but anyway, the big comics of the 90s, Big Book of the 70s, Big Book of Weirdos, Big Book of
those were DC.
Urban Legends, okay. No, they were, well, there was something called Paradox Press.
Yes. Okay. I don't know why, because they already had Vertigo.
They got more than, they also had Milestone. They got to have more than one. They got to spread their wings.
Milestone is gone, thankfully. Since there were no good Milestone comics.
Wait a minute, how could you say that as a white man, since this is minorities in these comic books telling our people's story? So how could...
Because the comics were crap. Static Shock.
A lot of people like that cartoon. They kept them around DC.
What about Icon? That was actually good, and they canceled it.
No, they all got canceled at the same time when the company went down. But I think Icon was around as long as, you know, until the end of the company. But, yeah, I guess I that's the only one I read. That's the only one I bought. And then I bought a couple of Blood Syndicates. But something about that, the art annoyed me. The art annoyed me out of most of them. Icon was the only one who I could understand the art. I think that was M.D. Bright, whose art I don't like. But I was willing to give it a pass. Okay, and I'm thinking about, those comics, this comic or those comics, you know, the paper they used to put comics on the newspaper type print paper and the way the colors looked on that. I remember for years we were saying, if they just go back to that, they can have comics cheaper. There's a comic book, I went to the comic book store the other day called MGMT. I don't think it's an independent comic, but it's Image of somebody big. But it's, anyway, the guy, I looked on the inside, the print is newspaper print. The text of the colors look like they do, you know, back in the days, like out of the independent comics. It's that cheaper paper. But the shit was still $4.
Because they know they can get away with charging that much.
No, that's fucked up, man. I'm mad. I'm pissed.
That's why I just download my comics for free like everybody should.
Speaking of that, I was about to get... I didn't buy anything except a pack of 4 comics for $1 yesterday. I didn't buy no more new comics. But I was about to get Inferno... Swamp Thing 3 is out, so I can finish it.
Oh, I just read 1 and 2.
Oh, well, what you think of that?
They were okay, because Gerber can't write badly if he wanted to. What was up with the reprints? I already read that story.
Because it was for us readers, we said we might as well review it now since we probably ain't going to review panel by panel. We might as well just talk about it. A lot of readers like me hadn't read that story. And that story relates to the new story, Inferno Mending. The reprint relates to that.
I see on the cover 2 of 3 So, yeah, I thought this was only going to be two issues.
If you read it, you saw that the issue number two ended on a cliffhanger.
I thought it, there was a weird note to end on.
And, but basically this story, it is a guy who's a writer in the old comic. He was a writer. He was delusional. I think what he, whatever he thought kind of came true, came to life. He's paranoid. And this woman and the man thing helps him.
And for some reason, he doesn't fuck the woman.
But in this future, this is takes place years later, when the guy who was cured, he went off to Hollywood and became a writer. Yeah, I don't think I'm going to, but basically he just came, like Ralph Macchio was saying in the beginning, in the foreword, he was saying, this character is Steve Gerber. He went to Hollywood, wrote some shitty cartoons. The company...
Thundor wasn't shitty.
Whatever you say. Anyway.
And his G.I. Joe episodes that he wrote were good.
It's still pablum. You know, it's not nothing deep. And he was dismayed. And that's why when he went to Marvel, that's what he did with his life. He was, and just like, yeah, so you can see how the character was miserable here. That was Steve Gerber. You know, he wasn't doing anything.
Did you ever read Stuart the Rat?
No, I didn't.
Because he basically wrote himself into the prologue for that. And, yeah, that was pretty cool.
Okay, I'll look that comic up. Well, I guess we won't review the whole thing. Maybe we will review it another time. Review one of the issues. But I got to read part three. So if you're not interested in seeing what happens.
Oh, well, now the three's out. I could look for it on DC++, of course.
But yeah, I think this. If we do it, it should be a fuel for a review some other time. But yeah, this guy is delusional. He's got and his character, like he thought of this character, Mindy the tree, and that's gonna be his new idea. And Mindy is talking to him on his trip across the country. It's a weird fucking story. And this guy is fucked up in a way. I want him to fucking die. But we'll review the story some other time. But I don't like how they draw the man thing in this story. I don't like this style.
No, I don't either. This guy, I think, drew some really weird-looking issues of New Mutants back in the day, and he's just as bad now as he ever was.
But Ralph Macchio was talking about the artist Kevin Nolan. He's talking about the art Kevin Nolan like they just had. He had just had to get Kevin to do this story. And it took Kevin years, and the motherfucker, I mean, how you working for a big company like Marvel to give you an assignment and you just let it fall by the wayside? And like 20 years later, excuse Steve Gerber's dead.
Sal Buscema could have drawn one of these issues in like a day.
Exactly. I would have fired, but this guy, he insisted, no, I gotta paint every page, every panel got to be painted so it could be beautiful. I'm like, motherfucker, this art, this ain't this great. It ain't that great. I could have had Sal Buscema do it and have a regular colorist do the story.
Meanwhile, in the Howard the Duck issue 16,
I didn't read the story yet. Did I say we were going to do that in 16? Oh, okay, well, yeah. I did say that. Anyway, I didn't get a chance to read Howard the Duck number 16. But I will close this out. I'll edit this up and close it out. This is Doom, Timmy Doom. Thanks for joining us for our review of Corporate Crime Comics number 1. You can find me at doomcast.blogspot.com.
And listen to Podcast X.
I didn't finish my pitching.
Well, I just got to the important part.
Good, yeah, at podcastx.com.
podcastx.blogspot.com.
Anyway,
I can't afford whatever it costs for a URL.
Yeah, I was just hoping that it misdirected people, but my plan didn't work. All right. Anyway, until next time, peace.